Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members and from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.
From Buffalo, Toronto Public Media, this is What's Next, an hour dedicated to amplifying the voices of marginalized and underrepresented communities across Western New York and Southern Ontario.
We cannot erase, we cannot reform, we cannot make things better if we're uncomfortable having tough conversations,
absolutely,
if we're uncomfortable talking about race.
What's Next carries forward our mission to engage in meaningful conversations about race, equity, and the shared concerns that deeply affect Buffalo's East Side and beyond.
Don't stop. Make those families part of your life. Their lives are part of yours. Don't stop.
Together, we dive into the real issues, striving for understanding, connection, and change.
In the suburban area, everywhere, we must work and teach our children.
And good morning to you. This is What's Next on Buffalo, Toronto Public Media, NPR. My name is Jay Moran, and we're going to continue and, I guess, complete our chances to talk with the candidates for the Democratic primary for Buffalo mayor. With us, we're going to introduce you, just because I think in the newspaper we see Anthony Tyson Thompson, Buffalo mayoral candidate, but you like to go by Tyson Thompson, right?
Yeah, just for simplicity. My mother got a little carried away with naming me. I have five names. My full name is Anthony Jerome Peter Tyson Thompson. So just for the sake, you know, as being a newcomer into the realms of politics, Tyson Thompson is fine.
All right. Well, the basic question is, why do you want to be mayor?
Yeah, you know, it's a why, but it's also a calling. You know, I grew up in the city of Buffalo, and, you know, I had a great childhood growing up. From the east side of Buffalo, grew up in the area of Kensington and Bailey. The school that I went for elementary school was Westminster. It was led by this woman named Dr. Reagan, Yvonne Reagan. Powerful change agent in person. You know, but also, you know, have seen the challenges. I've lived the challenges of Buffalo. You know, Buffalo being one of the most economically parts of the city. You know, and then east side being one of the most economically challenged parts of Buffalo.
Right.
You know, is really some of, you know, the most challenge of the challenge. And, you know, seeing people fall through the cracks, people who are, I would say, a lot more, have a lot more potential or a lot more inspiration or able to kind of understand things quickly than I do. People who are very talented, they fell through the cracks, not because of lack of ambition, but because of opportunity. And I've lived through that. I lived through the challenges of being a black kid in the hood, but also, I've been able to live the hope. I've been able to persevere. And that's only because of family and support and faith, you know. And my reason for being mayor is simple. I want everybody to have a fair shot. I want everybody to be able to have a thriving life and to be supported by a city and its government to make sure that they have everything they need in order to be a capable citizen.
I want to lean in a little bit as we go through our program about your East Side experience growing up. I the way you framed it is very intriguing for sure. Mm-hmm. But before we get to that, I'm talking with my colleagues about having an opportunity to interview you today. One of my colleagues referred to you as the wild card in the Buffalo mayoral race. So you can use that quote if you'd like.
Okay.
But it's interesting because, you know, as we follow how this race has developed, you made your announcement to become mayor just days before petitions were due.
Yeah.
Yet you came up with enough signatures to get on the ballot. You're on the ballot. You're going to be there on late June on primary day. You're going to be one of the options for people. So it sounds to me, I'm going to ask you to give me a little more specifics, but it sounds to me like you were working to get ready before you wanted to make the announcement. Do I have that right?
Absolutely. You know, I'll be honest with you. I knew I didn't have a fair shot at getting the Erie County Democratic endorsement process. Even the acting mayor, he even quoted the Godfather on public news and talking about how untransparent and how much it was. You know, I think after having, you know, 20 years of one guy, Buffalo has always been a wait your turn type of city.
Right.
A kiss the ring kind of city. You know, and a lot of times our leaders are put there, and rather than it being an open primary where competitiveness of ideas and real solutions are at the heart of it, but it's more about the political insider who's been here the longest and who's made the most connections. And I know no matter how many Ivy League degrees I have.
Two.
You're right. I know no matter how much expertise I had or how much work I've done in the community, I know I didn't stand a fair shot relative to who's were the longest serving person, which is, you know. But either way it goes, I knew that at the time that I was into the race, I was number 11 to come into the mayoral race.
Right.
10 people had announced for this, right? So there was a real vacuum of people wanting to fill the seat. People who are ignited to kind of mobilize and try to create change, or for whatever reasons with their passion or ethos might have been to get involved, they did so. And I knew at the time the way that structures and political media and, you know, all of these things work, that it was going to be a lot of noise. And I didn't want to let my message get drowned out. I didn't want to let my, you know, my first coming out as a community leader on a front facing a race to be dictated based off, you know, media or how they represented me. And I want to be the holder of my own story going forward. So me announcing was late. Was kind of saying, well, you know, let's let the old people fight it out for a bit.
Okay, sure. All right, fine.
You know, and let's not participate in a process that doesn't seem transparent and fair. So it was strategic on my part to come in to create and make my own story and let it resonate.
I'm interested in, back to the getting the petitions, being ready to announce and then file those petitions and have that filing go successfully, because one candidate, his was not successful. So, you know, just tell me how that was. I mean, I know how you go about getting signatures, but I want to maybe.
Oh, it's hard work. It's not as easy as it seems.
Not at all. But to that, I want to, you know, maybe talk a little bit about the legwork that went in.
For getting petitions?
Yeah.
Oh, man. So, you know, first and foremost, the state has put petitioning process in the two coldest months in New York State, February and March. And I really think that's a disservice to the people, because it really deters the everyday person from seeking political or public office.
Sure.
If people have families, if people have jobs, if people can't commit to doing elections or running for office full time, it really deters them, because you're in a blistering cold. In Buffalo's cold, snowy winter, where run over potholes and people are already just trying to rush into wherever they're trying to do because it's cold outside. They don't want the funding to talk to you. It creates a lot of barriers for people who want to get engaged and serve the community. And that's a real disheartening, I think, issue. And I kind of want to address that as a community leader. But beyond that, you know, you got to have tough. You got to be courageous. You got to be willing to put in the hard work, because a lot of people, they don't trust anymore in government. And, you know, a lot of things I hear when I'm, you know, we're circulating petitions, the first thing that they will say to me or one of the volunteers was, well, what you going to do for me? And, you know, it's harder than that. And what they're really saying is they have been, you know, ignored.
Right.
Haven't been seen and heard. And you have to have conversations with them that talks about, like, you know, the moral arc of the universe, how long it's been towards justice. You gotta continue to fight the good fight. You got to participate in the, at the very least, have your civic duty to get engaged and vote. Use it, because your vote is no more stronger than in a local election, where issues and solutions to those issues impact you more directly. So, you know, I think that was really the catalyst and cemented that I was heading in the right direction of answering my calling to get engaged and involved in the community. Beyond that, you know, you want to make sure that you get more than what you need. So you need 2,000 minimum signatures to run for mayor in the city of Buffalo, minimum. So you got to get more, because if you get one signature off, then you only got 1,999.
And you're out.
So, you know, best practice is always to try to get at least double. I got almost 4,000 signatures.
Okay.
Which was amazing. But then everybody sued me. I got challenged from every, you know, every guy running for mayor who was, you know, but the only guy who went through with actually challenging my signatures was Gardner Whitfield. But luckily we succeeded in that endeavor. And not only that, we came out on top through God's grace. We're now second on the ballot. So an amazing start. But now we're just looking forward to the primary and then hopefully to the general election.
So did you go door to door?
Oh, we went, man, listen, we went door to door. We went to laundromats, liquor stores, community centers, anywhere where anybody was, right? We went to them, we talked to them, we had conversations. They wanted to speak for a second or for an hour. We wanted to hear what people were thinking. And a lot of it was about the potholes, the crumbling infrastructure. A lot of it was about the despair in Buffalo, about the no, like the small glimmers of hope, but it's not good enough. And Buffalo is full of warm people. Like, don't get it, don't confuse Buffalo's weather with Buffalo's people.
Sure.
Full of warm, you know, hard-working people. It's a city, it's called the City of Good Neighbors for a reason. And, you know, hearing the testimonies about some of the things that they've been dealing with and having to navigate and how they got through it, it ultimately always encouraged me to keep moving forward, you know? So I went everywhere people were. I stood outside with folks. My volunteers always was eager and pushing me on, even though, you know, I was already kind of tired at the time. But we got out there and we got every signature and we handed them into the Board of Elections. And, you know, we got on the ballot. So, you know, I've been an underdog my entire life. And you just made a reference to me calling me the wild card.
Wild card.
And, you know, I'll be honest with you, that's something I'm used to. I'm used to people underestimating me. And I'm used to always proving them wrong time after time after time again. Who would ever thought this black boy from the east side of Buffalo could, you know, not only make it through Buffalo public schools and through the streets, but to, you know, learn from the greatest minds in the world and through, you know, my education, to change my trajectory, to make something of my life. And now I'll be back to help inspire the next generation and those who are here now, both new to Buffalo, who've been here for decades, to be a part of it, be a part of change. We can't keep expecting a new Buffalo from the same old people in the status quo. We need new vision and bold, dynamic leadership.
Those conversations you had, and I appreciate some of the concepts that you laid out, the issues that came around. The pothole thing, yeah. You know, you're affirming what we've kind of been hearing from other places as well. But is there a conversation maybe where, like, you know, someone just came at you hard and you had really...
Everybody.
Yeah?
So, first of all, new kid on the block, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Versus the old dogs, yeah. And, you know, everybody wants to know who you are. And I don't just mean your name. I mean, like, who are you, right?
Right.
And how are you different from the status quo, right? What gives you, you know, what gives you the spark to want to lead a city? And you have to have tough conversations and you have to really lay it out there. Like, this is, I may be new to, in terms of the political arena, but I'm not new to politics or to the community. My entire life has been about change and transformation. It's been about how can we change our communities. You know, I started off as an organizer. I was, you know, working in education, doing that for several years. Worked as a public advocate for the American Cancer Society. I ran multiple campaigns all through the country, raised millions of dollars all throughout the country for philanthropic efforts. I've been a part of conversations. I've been a part of systematic change. It's just that I don't need popularity or notoriety. I just need the work to get done.
Tyson Thompson with us here on What's Next. One of the candidates for Buffalo mayor. His name will be on the Democratic primary ballot come June 24th. One of your experiences you told me about, you were down in a kind of a pivotal campaign in Florida back in 2016. You helped out with Representative Murphy, if I believe the name is, right?
Yeah, Representative Stephanie Murphy. Yeah, she is the first Vietnamese woman to serve in the U.S. Congress. It was a Florida campaign. What happened, my father had just passed of cancer. This August 6th will be the 10th year since his passing. And, you know, I was lost for a bit. And, you know, I just kind of had to get out of the funk, and I had to do something to kind of reignite my spirit. And I decided to get engaged. At the time, it was 2016, so I was saying earlier it was the rise of Donald Trump,
right, in Florida,
and in Florida. Yeah, that's a big
put the exclamation point next to that.
Yeah, that's a big word, right? Florida. So that's Trump country. And let me tell you, man, politics in Florida is not like New York. And I mean, you know, it's a lot different in a lot of different ways. And I was hired through the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, the DCCC, and I was down there to do kind of field work, you know, work with the field director, do field work. And I tell you, man, it was hard work. It was long hours. But, you know, it motivated something to me to see things happen in real time, hearing this guy just, you know, you know, everything that I could pretty much be against, you know, a guy like Trump and the guy who we were running against in the primary or in their congressional race was like it. It was this 22-year served incumbent. His name was John Mica. And he's a real piece of work, said a lot of horrible things about a lot of different things. But what happened that gave the campaign a glimmer of hope was the fact that Stanford, Florida, had just became a part of the congressional district. And for those who don't know, Stanford, Florida is one of the Black Wall Streets of Buffalo. It had a lot of affluent Black people who were able to withstand structural systemic marginalization, disenfranchisement, racism, and a whole host of other issues and make a thriving community. Is where Jackie Robinson was born, but it's also where Trayvon Martin was tragically murdered. So at the time in the community, there was a lot of activism. A lot of people were kind of rising up and getting engaged and mobilizing to work their way towards the pole for change. And luckily that wave of support ultimately helped push Stephanie Murphy over the win. And a great woman, actually I met with her where we had like a Zoom call at Harvard because she came back to like teach a class. So yeah, she's doing really well. And she's since retired from the Congress, but, you know, really good pivotal point. And after that, I went off to work for the American Cancer Society for about a year doing philanthropic and advocacy work.
You've got quite the experience for sure for a young man. At the same time, I'm interested how you said that district was, it seemed like it was, you know, because of the Trayvon Martin tragedy and kind of the racial element of the Trump campaign in 2016, it sounded like you had a lot of activity going on in that district. Mm-hmm. Do you see a similar emotion, a similar passion here in Buffalo, or is it lacking?
That's a good question. When I'm talking to people in Buffalo, and when I'm discussing issues and I'm trying to motivate them or get them engaged or activated, a lot of people are activated. They are engaged. But a lot of people have so much distrust of city government or government in general. They don't like where politics is, where we've come so polarized, everything is a this or that, that there's no room for nuance and complexity. There's a lot of despair in the city. There's a lot of people who are tired of the status quo, and they're hungry for something different, for new vision, bold, dynamic leadership, right? A lot of people are tired of the same old people doing the same old things, and Buffalo stays the same way. Only thing changes is promotions for the people who are currently in office, and that's a real challenge. You know, my candidacy represents newness and how do we move Buffalo forward. Not for the sake of talking or talking points or sound bites, but actual systemic issues being addressed in the city. So I think this campaign is so important. It's pivotal. It's transcending because first time in 20 years, we have an open primary in the city. There are five candidates running, which is unheard of in the city of Buffalo. You know, they're all great men, I'll say that. But, you know, we can't keep expecting New Buffalo from the same people. That's one. Number two, you know, it's time to move forward. I think that there's a lot of structural and systemic issues going on in Buffalo. And, you know, a lot of problems that have happened under their wing and under their thumb. And now they're trying to repackage themselves as a solution. I think that's, you know, also an issue that deserves more conversation. But we got to get engaged because whoever the next leader is, you got to make sure that we recognize that difference between authority and leadership. Authority is only a position. And whoever the next mayor is, that's only one person with one bit of authority in one office. You know, it's going to take an entire city to transform the city of Buffalo. So you need a leader who knows the nuance of policy implementation, how to attack things, and then make sure it's being put into the community to work effectively, but also working as a city's lead organizer to make sure that power doesn't just come from the top down, it rises from the bottom up.
I know you want to look forward. That's what campaigns are all about, of course. But we've circled around this individual with a lot of different conversations here. Like you said, this is the first time in 20 years Byron Brown's not going to be running for mayor. It came out of the grassroots campaign out of the heart of Buffalo's East Side. Did he let down the city of Buffalo?
So I give a lot of grace and a lot of admiration for Byron Brown, but I also, out of love, give him critique. You know, it's through that both that we figure out how to move forward. This is class that we take at Harvard when you go to the Kennedy School of Government to learn. I mean, it's called Exercising Leadership. And one of the things that you're required to do, every student who takes the class, is you have to do a failures case. You have to analyze as a case study how a leader, and how particularly you as a leader, failed in your life as a professional, as a change agent. And it's not there to knock you down. It's there so you can learn from the mistakes. You know, I spoke about, you know, the moral arc of the universe earlier. That's one of Martin Luther King's like famous, you know, pedagogy. He talks about how it's long, but it's bent towards justice. You know, he was the first black mayor of the city of Buffalo to put the expectation that he was going to solve all of East Side issues. You know, I think we need to give him a little bit more grace than that, but also keep him accountable that it's ways in which he could have done more. Now, as the next mayor of Buffalo, it's my job to be a student of that history, to see where those pockets were, those glimmer of hopes, those mishandlings, and try to improve on it. So, you know, being a student of the facts, of the history, of the challenges at play, just because he's a black man or a particular person with a particular demographic in office, there are still structures in place that prevent him from being able to move or create swift change all across
the
city.
Sure, appreciate that.
You know, you have to, you know, you have to do what you can, however you can, for as long as you can, and be ready to pass the baton to the next generation so that they can move the needle forward. You know, I'll say, you know, I want to always be honest to people that change doesn't happen all the time in big swoops. It happens painfully slow, incrementally. And you have to have what we call the capacity for despair, right? It's saying that I know what we're up against. There's no such thing as a broken system. Everything is designed perfectly to work the way it is. So when you're keeping that in mind, that when you try to push back or intervene or, you know, solve something in the system, this matrix code is going to push back. So it's going to be a little bit of back and forth. You have to have the capacity for the spirit that says that I'm not going to win immediately tomorrow. But if you keep going, if you keep moving forward, pushing the needle little by little, every single day and every little week and every generation, that hopefully we'll get to the promised land. And this campaign for me is the passing of that baton. So I've been speaking with people who are young and old to the city, who are both young and old in age, who are from the East Side to the West Side, from the North and South. We have to be holistic in our approach. It has to have an entire city of people coming together to address the issues of the city of Buffalo.
I only ask one more question about former Mayor Byron Brown, I promise. But other candidates have been here, and we've had this discussion as well. And I was impressed by the way you framed it, that, you know, he did certain things. There are systems in place that aren't all that easy to change. At the same time, did his vision of change, or did his effort toward change, did it slow, maybe, as he moved on in his years, would you say?
Yeah, I would say every public servant has a shelf life. I think 20 years of being a mayor is quite long.
Right.
And I would say the job is incredibly tough. And you have to be hungry to be the mayor. It's one of the world's most thankless jobs, right? The mayor's responsible, or at least the blame, everything that goes wrong, regardless if it's in his purview or not. Potholes, garbage collection, the light goes out, it's the mayor's fault. You stomp your toe on the side of a walk, oh man, that's Byron Brown or whoever the mayor is fault, right? So you have to take that in consideration of what you're up against. And when you're a public servant, you're doing the world's and addressing the world's most intractable issues. So you gotta be tough. And it could wear down on you. And I can imagine after 20 years, he started to get tired. And so I do think that it was time for him to move aside. And I'm happy that he ended up where he is. We now share the same slogan. I don't want you to like Buffalo. I want you to love Buffalo. That's very true. It's very true.
Well, I can appreciate that one for sure. All right, so when we come back, we're going to take a timeout. When we come back, we're going to get into some of those, like you just said, some of those challenges that the mayor's office has for sure. We're talking with Tyson Thompson, candidate for Buffalo mayor. He will be on the Democratic primary ballot coming up on June 24th. We'll take a timeout, come back with more. This is What's Next on Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR.
What do classical symphonies, in-depth news, dramas, DIY, and your favorite indie bands have in common? They're all part of Buffalo Toronto Public Media. We've updated our station names to reflect the big picture. BTPM PBS, BTPM NPR, BTPM Classical, BTPM The Bridge, BTPM Create, and BTPM PBS Kids. Different formats, one mission: to serve our cross-border community. Learn more at btpm.org.
This is Jack Cruiser with The Scoreboard on BTPM NPR. Listen during Morning Edition and All Things Considered each Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for the latest on pro matchups and college rivalries, as well as standout local athletes from Western New York and Southern Ontario. Want more? Listen to a longer version of The Scoreboard at btpm.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to What's Next, our place to discuss the important issues of our communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario. We want to hear from you. Click on the Talk to Us option in the BTPM Listen app, and we will work to get your questions or comments on the air. Do you have a story or concern that we should be addressing? Email us using whatsnext@btpm.org. Together, we'll have the conversations that are needed. This is Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR.
And welcome back to What's Next. Our guest today is candidate for Buffalo Mayor. We've had all the other candidates on so far, and now we have, you'll see his name in the paper, is Anthony Tyson Thompson. Wants to go by Tyson Thompson, and most certainly welcome to have you with us here, Tyson Thompson. Your experience in the East Side, this, you probably aren't totally aware of the background of this program, but it came on not long after 514. 2022, and a major focus for us has been talking to people with East Side experience about the reality of race in the city of Buffalo.
Yeah.
So I don't want to totally get off of your campaign and politics, but at the same time, you're obviously an observant student of the world and of life. What is missing from the narrative of what people? Even people right here in the city of Buffalo, about the East Side of Buffalo. What's missing? What is missing? What don't people understand?
Yeah, so actually, I can't talk about my candidacy for mayor without speaking about 514. It's one of my biggest catalysts. At the time, I was working as the comms director for Crystal People's Oaks. And people don't know how important that Thompson Jefferson is for the East Side of Buffalo. We live in a food desert. It's really the only grocery store in the East Side of Buffalo. And, for all of Buffalo's greatness, we're still far behind from where we need to be. Buffalo is one of the most segregated cities. This northern New York City, most segregated city in the country. That's a real issue. And that goes into exacerbating and sustaining a lot of our structural systemic issues. Someone had found out about our flaws, our city's flaws, and they used it to commit a horrendous act of terrorism in our community. They exploited our flaws to kill some of our people out of hate. So 514 was, I could remember getting a call, because at the time I was working for the state. And, the chief of staff for Crystal, Mark, texts the entire group and says, everybody's safe. And, we know what's going on. Like, what are you asking? Something happened? And they were getting live updates from law enforcement as it was happening. And they were telling people to stay out the area. Like I said, my entire family is pretty much from the East Side of Buffalo, but I've been honored to, be a student of the entire city or a citizen of the entire city. And my family shops there regularly. On Fridays, they go get the fried chicken there. That's real renowned in the community.
Yes, right.
They sometimes gather there and talk and, just get their little errands done. And that day, some people were doing that, but they didn't return home. I haven't lived a tougher day than that day, especially considering that could have been me. It could have been anybody in my family. And for some people, it was their family. Partially, we have to look at our electeds to, be accountable, not so much for blame, but for transformation. We should never let something like that happen again. There should never be a way where people can exploit segregation or separate our flaws in order to create an attack like that. we have to be bold and courageous when we say, like, you know, this community is in need, but so is every other community in need of systemic change. We got to find ways to make sure there are, you know, more resources that people can use every day. Grocery stores, places where people can get, you know, health screenings and health checks, things that everybody needs to be a thriving citizen so that they can, you know, ultimately have a very thriving life. And as mayor, that's one of my biggest, you know, priorities of entering this race.
Grew up on the East Side. You went to Hutch Tech.
Yeah.
How was life growing up on the East Side?
You know, man, we grew up modestly. And, you know, the thing about growing up poor is that you don't recognize you're poor until you have something to compare it to.
Right, of course.
So everybody else is living in the same boat. So you think, hey, this is just normal. So, I'm looking now, being from where I've lived and what I've experienced, I recognize that we were very low in the totem pole in social economics. But I would not have never been able to guess that because I had a family who was wealthy in love and support. I'm one of eight. My mom is one of nine grandparents. And then I got my other side of family. So, you know, my family raised us to be, all my cousins to be as close as siblings. So, you know, that's one of my small privileges, right? The reason why I've been able to succeed in life is because of family, because I was one of the youngest out of the eight. And then that I had cousins and they were all older than me. So I got to see them make their mistakes and learn from it. Live vicariously through my family. Say, you know what? What I'm not going to do is raise my voice to my mom. I seen how that worked for my brother. That's not a good go. So I got that. And a lot of people in the East Side, they may not have that strong family connection. They may not have a strong connection to church or an organization that helps imbue, you know, hope and sustainable, like, growth. So a lot of people, they might be the first born in their family. So a big burden is on them. Underperforming for schools is a real issue. Economic opportunity is really despair. There are all these little, small, micro variables that over time they add up to be a very big thing that impacts a lot of lives, not just in the East Side of Buffalo, though, all throughout the city.
Certainly.
And we keep reminding ourselves that East Side is one of the most challenged and one of the most challenged cities. So the entire city of Buffalo is in need of revamp and transformation, and not just someone who can talk it, but someone who knows how to implement it and create systemic change at the root level.
Let's talk about then move on to the rest of the city. And like, yeah, you said, a holistic approach. Appreciate that thought about it as well. So, you know, where does that start? How do you start that? Is there something already in mind that,
yeah,
if I was day one in office, this is what I'd do?
See, I'm smart enough to know I'm not the smartest person in the world.
You might be the smartest person in this room, but that's another story. You're the one with the two Ivy League degrees. I'm just a Buff State guy.
Hey, listen, man, I met some of the smartest people in my life at ECC, and I met some people, I'm like, I'm not sure that's right, at Harvard.
Okay, all right, fair.
So don't. To your question, which was, I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, if you had a first day in office.
First day in office, oh yeah.
And thinking about the whole city.
The whole city.
What could you do? What would you do?
So, you know, a good leader knows how to analyze, synthesize, and diagnose. So, knowing that you have this authority, this structural authority for city government, is to listen. I don't want to make it oversimplicated, but people make it incredibly complex for no reason.
Sure.
Let people be seen and be heard. What are people really feeling? Really kind of address the emotion in the room, but don't get stuck there. Go down to why they feel that. Feelings are symptoms. If you feel hate, you feel angry, you feel, you know, despair, but it's a reason why. And as a leader, it's my job to get to those underlying needs and then address those things through city government. So, you know, we talk about the East Side a lot. And I would say in the entire city, there are a bunch of initiatives throughout Buffalo's West Side, East Side, South Side, even North Side. And they have all of these programs and initiatives and grants. The only problem is that the system is so convoluted. There's so much red tape,
right,
that people aren't able to access it because you have to be in the in crowd, the political insider to get them. You got to know how to speak the right jargon or know the right person who handshakes, you know, and it kind of leaves out our people. So how can we make government more accessible and work for the working people? How can we make sure everybody has the access to thrive and opportunity? That's what we need to do. And one of my plans to do that is to, you know, activate the resources that we already have, right? Is to use a 311 call center. 311 call center should not be, you know, it definitely needs to be more proactive than reactive.
Okay.
When a citizen calls 311 and they have an issue, they should be helping navigate them through that issue through inception to completion. So if someone needs help with the grant, finding navigators to help them actually assess that grant, look over the application, see where the holes are so they can also ultimately get it. You know, we have a lot of things where people give money for entrepreneurship or for small business owners, but sometimes a lot of people aren't small business owners. So you also need to keep in mind that we have to teach one to reach one. So if people are interested in entrepreneurship, making sure we have programs so people can learn how to write a business plan. You know, to have your bail team, which is a banker, accountant, insurance, lawyer.
Okay.
Knowing that, you know, the ins and outs of what does it look like to apply for a business loan and why it's important to have, you know, your run of show on the back of a napkin, analytics. And then, you know, helping them guide that, because when you have a thriving small business and when you have a city that's full of people who are not only engaged in municipal government, but have the resources to thrive in municipal government, that's how you create a thriving city. That's how you, like, in a deficit. That's how you address systemic issues by people rising up and thriving out.
I saw some of your comments in the Buffalo News that they took, and one of the things that you did mention is, you know, you promised disciplined, transparent financial leadership. Mm-hmm. What does that look like?
Yeah, so we have had, the city of Buffalo has had years and years and years, not just from one administration, not just from the mayor's office,
right?
Folks who have always overestimated, overpromised revenue and underestimated cost. That has led to a structural deficit. And this approach of always running with our heads chopped off of doing a year after year budget is not a long term. It's frivolous. It's not serious at all. We have to do multi-year planning when it comes to it, so we could have at least, you know, a long game, you know, strategic planning for how are we actually going to move this city forward so we're not in a deficit anymore. And we also have to recognize, once again, going back to the capacity disparity, that a $70 million deficit in the city of Buffalo is huge. That number cannot be underestimated. It's going to take some time. Any candidate who's running on the idea they're going to solve this structural deficit within a year, they're lying to you. Let me be the first person to tell you. But I'll tell you what we can't do. We have to be transparent and forthcoming with people, let them know the truth. And we also have to make sure that we're not burdening, once again, one of the most challenged cities and its taxpayers for the full burden of it. So we got to make sure we're being smart. We got to make sure that we're expanding the tax base. That includes, like, bringing new industries to Buffalo, both private and public. It looks like creating more jobs. But we also have to, on that pack, take a holistic approach, make sure people are educated and ready for those jobs, and those jobs speak to the citizens of Buffalo. So, you know, we've had a lot of issues, Buffalo being a Rust Belt city. A lot of our steels have closed, like Bethlehem Steel. A lot of my uncles used to work there, mm-hmm. Ford plant and stuff. So, you know, what is the new industry now that Buffalo can use or needs to build a thriving economy? And what other ways in which can we build a thriving economy? The entertainment industry in this city is not the greatest. And we could take a look at all of the other thriving cities across the country. And one thing that they do have is a thriving culture. And that anticipates, or that helps promote tourism. It provides more business and people coming to the city to being a part of it. You know, any thriving city has great tourists, and they have people coming in and out, doing business in and out of the city. We have to ignite that. Toronto is 2 hours north. It's colder and gloomier. Hmm. Yet they have a thriving economy, and it's partly due because of their culture. So there's no reason why we can't have the same things here, but it's going to take a city government and leader to recognize and appreciate the impact of creatives, of artists, of people who throw on events. We have to make Buffalo a vibrant, fun place, but ultimately, above all, safe.
Appreciate that, the concept about the multi-year planning when it comes to the budget. I'm sure there's a lot of people who are going to look at their tax bill this year. Wish you were there a while ago. But at the same time, I'm not going to ask you necessarily to endorse one of your opponents here. But, you know, a couple of things that are covering the deficit this year are going to be the mobile parking authority, the sale of the parking ramps, the hotel bed tax. What are what's your analysis of those?
Those are band-aids, not so much real fixes. And I get that, you know, I'm not going to critique too badly anyone for trying. And I think he, acting Mayor Scanlon, is doing the best he can. I just don't believe it's enough. I think that selling the parking lot is a mistake. I've heard the comptroller say that that brings a significant revenue year after year. Selling it for a one-time cash option is going to put a temporary Band-Aid. But ultimately, you know, in a year, so the way real estate has been in going up in this city, right, people, you know, it goes up, you know, a couple hundred thousand every few years. So I think that that doesn't address the long-term issues. I think that what we really have to do is look at the operations of the city of Buffalo, find the inefficiencies, make sure that we have the frontline services in place, but make sure we're looking at the inefficiencies of how can we make sure that we're managing this properly. I always talk about the story about how at Harvard, it's this woman named Linda Belmis, and she's a part of the Clinton administration. She was the CFO for the White House. And if you know anything about that, our national deficit has been red for however long our national deficit has been. But under the Clinton administration, it was balanced. Then right, it was green for a little bit, surplus.
Yep.
That's because of Linda Belmis. So she teaches a class actually on municipal budgeting. And the story I always say that she says that sometimes these people, they use the budget as a political way of gaining more political capital and, you know, headlines. And most times that the people are not really serious about these budgets. What they're really doing is doing a WAG. And it stands for a wild blank guess. She says there's nothing less sexy than municipal budgeting, right? Taking line item 2 and moving it to 12C.
Right.
But what you have to do is you have to be first honest about where you're at. You have to attack it like analytically, and then from there diagnose what are the real inefficiencies, and from there address it through structurals and movements. That's where we are in Buffalo. I don't think any of the candidates' proposals have sound right. I don't think that a bed tax right now, when Buffalo's already kind of having issues with tourism, is going to hit the bucket. I don't think eliminating our overtime to our emergency staff is going to do it either. I think one of the opponents mentioned that, oh yeah, crime is down, so let's get rid of the overtime. Well, maybe the overtime is the reason why crime is down. So you got to make sure you're not using the correlating and misdiagnosing the real means to the ends or ends to the means. So you have all of these guys who I believe are really trying to come up with innovative ways, but I hate to say it, there's city governing is boring. You got to do the full audit, and you got to be in collaboration with the comptroller. And you got to look at everything and figure out where those inefficiencies lies. And then you got to work as a partner in government through all of the different levels, whether it's the county, the state, and federal level, to make sure that we're getting enough resources so that Buffalo can be thriving once again.
So I take one more time out. We'll come back and finish up our conversation with Tyson Thompson, one of the candidates for Buffalo mayor. His name will be on the ballot coming up on June 24th, the Democratic primary here in the city of Buffalo. This is What's Next on Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR.
Here, Here, live music in Buffalo, New York is your guide through the melodic pulse of the city. Get a VIP behind-the-scenes look at the broad collective of vibrant festivals, historic venues, and mind-blowing artists that take the main stage and make Buffalo, New York the music destination it is. Listen to Here, Here, hosted by Bentley on Thursdays at 11:30 a.m. and Saturdays at 6:30 p.m. on 88.7 BTPM NPR.
Corey here with the Compact Civics Expansion Pack.
America is such a big, wide, awesome place, and to be able to see things that are representative of so many different places, it can be so important when brought to your tiny town.
Everybody is so kind and loving. I'm here in Buffalo just because of State Buffalo.
From urban farms to rural fairs, we'll celebrate spaces that bring us together and create community.
Watch on the Buffalo Toronto Public Media YouTube channel.
You're listening to What's Next, our place to discuss the important issues of our communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario. We want to hear from you. Click on the Talk to Us option in the BTPM Listen app, and we will work to get your questions or comments on the air. Do you have a story or concern that we should be addressing? Email us using whatsnext@btpm.org. Together, we'll have the conversations that are needed. This is Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR.
And welcome back to What's Next with this Anthony Tyson Thompson. That's how you'll read Mr. Thompson's name in the newspaper and probably on the, is that the way it's going to read on the ballot? Anthony Tyson Thompson, or would it be Tyson Thompson?
Yeah, Anthony Tyson Thompson.
Anthony Tyson. But you, but if people meet you on the street, you want to go by Tyson Thompson.
Yes, that's fine. And just second on the ballot.
Second on the ballot.
Second
on
the ballot.
Who's above?
It's Chris Galen, it's me, and then everybody else.
Okay, very good. Yeah. You know, we talked about you've had your education experiences. Great. You spent some time down in Morgan, down in Maryland, one of the historically black colleges and universities. Graduate from Canisius, your undergrad, Columbia, Harvard as well. That's some education, for sure. Is that just kind of part of your DNA, that lifelong learner kind of thing?
I think if you really want to be a change agent, you have to always be pushing yourself for, you know, more knowledge, more wisdom. And, you know, I'm a big proponent of education. I believe it's one of those things that it doesn't matter any of your demographics, if you're black or white, what your race is, your zip code, your income, your influence, your last name. Education is one of those things that help you transcend and really change the trajectory in life to do something and be something.
Yeah, but I'm wondering, spread out into a kind of a national conversation because of your experience in some of these, you know, other parts of the country, but you also kind of see a backlash against higher education, right? I mean, what are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, I think that's a real pity because there's no better place where you could challenge your biases, both implicit and explicit, than at higher learning, where you have to not only create a position, but you got to defend it. You have to have open dialogue. You have to actually go find proof to support your argument. You learn how to be a critical thinker in those rooms, right? And then you get to recognize the diversity of ideas. The idea that, hey, I don't agree with you, but we can still have civil discourse to find where we are. And I think that when you limit the ability for a higher education, or you're talking about things, I'm sure you're trying to get to like the Department of Education at the federal level. Yeah, okay.
Either way, I mean, I just think it's something I've seen polls that say, you know, that, you know, higher education, you know, there's this kind of a pushback to it. There's those kinds of things.
It depends on if you like, you know, you're trying to, you know, use higher education a way to always be an expert.
Right.
You know, we had the saying that, that you don't always trust the expert,
right?
A lot of times experts are wrong, and sometimes the people who are on the ground, the people who may have been untraditional in terms of their way of getting their expertise, is that they have a closer beat to what's really going on. So I think higher education is important, but things like empathy and compassion, those are things that transcend sometimes the rest of the rest. So it's good to have an Ivy League degree, but if you're an a-hole, it doesn't really amount to much.
Right.
Right. If you're hard-headed or you're stubborn or you're not welcoming of new ideas and the possibility that you might be wrong, then you haven't really learned. You just went through a program and to get a degree. And I think that if there is a problem with higher learning, that it needs to be that we need to have more learners and less graduates. Right. People who are open and open to challenge, open to learning and exposure. That's how we create a populace, a country, a world full of people with compassion, empathy, and people who are able to see things and change them.
I like the way you describe it, higher education, right out of your mouth. You know, the challenges of bias that you experience. We have a political divide in this country. Maybe you can argue that we don't, but I'm going to say that we do. And a lot of people don't like to talk to each other. And we had a nice conversation before we went on the air. We were talking about, you know, conflict resolution and some of the experience that you've had in that. Have you run into these conversations with people who are just, you know, whatever side, I'll let you decide which side of the gulf they're on, but somewhere far away from you. Yeah. Have you had those conversations, and how have they gone?
Every single day.
Yeah.
Every single day. And you recognize that when you're dealing with conflict, it's not, like I was saying earlier, it's not conflict that's the issue. It's how you navigate or approach conflict. For example, how you handle conflict at church is vastly different than how you would handle conflict in a boxing ring, right? Mm-hmm. The systems, the environment, the place, they all go together. But conflict is a necessary component to life. If you think as conflict as, or life as being a garden, conflict is water, right? Not enough water. Not enough conflict, the plants don't grow. Too much conflict, you're drawing it out. So you need the right balance. Adversity is how you grow in life. So when you're thinking about that, you have to expose yourself to things to test where you are with those. Really think about what are your, you know, cornerstone values and how that might be able to disagree, but recognizing that that person might not be wrong because, you know, one of our founding fathers always say a difference in opinion is not a difference in principle. So I think what's going on now when we look across the country and even at the world globally, that we have an issue where you have to be this or that. You got to be, you know, for police or against police. You got to be, you know, for this issue or against this issue. And there's so much nuance being missed. There's so much conversation that can be had. You're not going to convince anybody in an argument or debate. You have to be open and curious to really hear that person. Why do they think that way? What is the why? What is the underlying need? Why do they feel this way? Why do they think this way? Why does this have to be the way? To get a basic understanding. And it can't be a place of judgment. Curiosity, right? And then you got to go with them. And then only through that conversation of getting to know them, getting to know their why and who they are, can that person begin to feel comfortable with you with saying, you know what, maybe I am wrong. But doing it forcefully is not how it works. You have to be mindful of that. So we, you know, having this thing called civil discourse, which is I might not agree with exactly how you got to your conclusion, but we can align that the conclusion needs to be met. I don't really care if you say, hey, at the end of the day, we need this initiative for this community. I don't care how you got to that conclusion, more so. I just care that we align on that matter. So sometimes not always having to exactly agree with everybody is important, but it also makes sure that you and your position is stronger because now you've seen the other perspectives and perceptions. It ultimately helps you grow as a change agent and just as a person in general.
What about race? How's that playing out? Like you said, you were down in Florida in 2016. You're right there.
Yeah.
Right there. I mean, you talk about being on the front line of a change of the political spirit, if for lack of a better term, in this country. You're right there. But what about race? Where does it stand? What do you think about
So, you know, we talked about 514, okay. And we talked about Buffalo being one of the most segregated cities in the country. So it's incredibly important. We have to recognize that there are real racial disparities across our city, across our state, our country, and around the globe. We got to be honest about it. We have to be, you know, have to say what it is. A lot of people are uncomfortable with having conversations, and I think because everybody's afraid of saying the wrong thing and possibly doing the wrong thing, but real leadership is being okay and bold enough for failure, is being okay with the spirit, saying, I recognize the reality of what it is, but I won't stand for it. I'm going to move and do whatever I can to move the needle forward. So we have to have real good approach to racism and all the other intractable issues that they're not just going to go over away because one person gets elected or the right person with the right color, with the right demographic is, you know, has this bit of authority. It takes a full community. It takes full community people who are willing and open to seeing how their privilege might impact other folks, which in ways in which we can use our resources equitably to address the issue. You know, and making sure that we have the right feedback mechanism so that we're actually listening to people so they can feel heard, feel seen.
We're down to our last minute here. I'm sure you have your elevator pitch when it comes to you up on front stoops throughout the city of Buffalo. Giving this 30-second elevator pitch of why people should vote for Tyson Thompson.
You know, this campaign is less about me, and it's more about the us, the inclusive we. You know, this is a really pivotal point in Buffalo, and we have the status quo, which is full of despair, full of them potholes on Main Street. It's full of, you know, economic opportunity that really needs a big push, and childhood poverty, one of the worst in the country. We could continue to do this with the same people for the same reasons, for the same old ways, or we could go a different path, one of hope, one of promise, one of helping working people to, you know, build a thriving city. When you look at the other candidates, and you really should look at all the candidates, see who has the biggest capacity for actually making transformational change, not just lip service. A lot of people don't even know the mayor's race going on. A lot of people didn't even know who these candidates were until they started coming around the community to ask for the vote. So we got to make sure, and that's the issue. If you've been elected official for over a decade and no one knows who you are, that's the problem. You know, I think what we need in the city of Buffalo is new vision, bold, dynamic leadership. And I think when you do your homework, you'll see that the candidate that is that wild card you just mentioned with the long name.
the real long name, but we'll just call him Tyson Thompson. And by the way, just for anybody who's listening, we have interviews with all of the candidates who will be on the Democratic primary ballot. You can find that at btpm.org/NPR. Look up What's Next. You'll find all of those conversations there. And hopefully you've enjoyed this conversation with Anthony Tyson Thompson, Mayor Democrat. Candidate for mayor. How about that? I've spoken a little in advance. Huh? Maybe projecting something for that. But thanks so much for your time today, sir.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
This has been What's Next on Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR.
Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members and from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.